Dr. Powell, Mr. McLeod, I'd like to thank you both for your interest in the inquiry and for your appearance at today's hearing. The purpose of this hearing is to assist me in gathering evidence for the Climate Health WA inquiry into the impacts of climate change on health in Western Australia. My name is Taran Wiramantri, and I've been appointed by the Chief Health Officer to undertake the inquiry. Besides me is Dr. Sarah Joyce, the inquiry's project director. If everyone could please be aware that the use of mobile phones and other recording devices is not permitted in this room, so if you could please make sure that your phone is on silent or switched off. This hearing is a formal procedure convened under Section 231 of the Public Health Act 2016. While you are not being asked to give your evidence under oath or affirmation, it is important you understand that there are penalties under the Act for knowingly providing a response or information that is false or misleading. This is the public hearing and a transcript of your evidence will be made for the public record. If you wish to make a confidential statement during today's proceedings, you should request that part of your evidence be taken in private. You have previously been provided with the inquiry's terms of reference and information on giving evidence to the inquiry. So before we begin, do you have any questions about today's hearing?
No.
Thank you. For the transcript, could I ask each of you to state your name and the capacity in which you are here today, and if throughout the hearing you could briefly state your name just for the purposes of the audio recording.
My name is Dr. Glenn Power. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Perth Clinic, 101-bed private psychiatric facility in Western Australia. I'm also serving as the Branch President of the Australian Private Hospitals Association, West Australian Branch.
I'm Carla McLeod. I'm the Support Services Manager at Joondalup Health Campus, here to talk about the initiatives that we have taken on at Joondalup Health Campus.
Thank you both. And I'm sure, Dr. Powell, that you'll make it clear in which capacity you're speaking as we go through the hearing. Would you like to make a brief opening statement?
Thank you, Taran. As I'm here to represent the private hospital sector, I thought it'd be useful to give an overview of the contribution of private hospitals in Western Australia to meeting demand and serving the activity overall. An opening remark, private hospitals in Western Australia are both private acute facilities, freestanding and dedicated private psychiatric hospitals, and freestanding day hospitals. For the Commonwealth's purposes, they consider hospitals that hold a declaration for private health insurance billing as part of their legislative framework, and they enumerate the number of private licensed hospitals in Western Australia as at the year 2016-17 to be 64. Now, the state licensing regime managed by the Licensing and Accreditation Regulatory Unit of the Department of Health in 2019 considered that there were 122 private hospitals. Their figures are similar to the Commonwealth in respect to acute hospitals, 22 versus 23, but noting that there are 1 year different in terms of timing for this information, which I'll certainly leave to the inquiry's benefit. The state also includes in their number a range of smaller facilities, peritoneal dialysis units, hemodialysis units, sedation competent day hospitals or clinics, as well as what we call the Class A freestanding day hospitals capable of delivering anaesthesia and the acute and psychiatric facilities. So the state number at 122 is somewhat larger than the Commonwealth's number. But let's take similarities between the two. State and Commonwealth are largely in agreement around the number of anaesthesia competent day hospitals and the acute private and acute psychiatric facilities. So around 64 facilities in 2016-17, according to the Commonwealth. Those facilities contributed approximately 43% of the 1.193 million separations that were performed as admitted patient care, either ambulatory admissions or multi-day overnight admissions in the year 2017-18. So 43% of the total activity in the year 17-18, according to the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare's admitted patient care volume. So in terms of the contribution to climate change as part of the overall health sector, the contribution is likely very significant, and we'd be pleased to frame our responses today in that context. Thank you.
If you could just outline a little bit about the history of the sector in Western Australia. Has it changed much over the last few decades? Is it much affected by rates of private health insurance, et cetera? What are the kind of big levers on the sector?
Thank you. I guess fundamentally it's the demand available for receiving care in private hospitals as would be covered under private health insurance. In Western Australia, our rate of private health insurance as a proportion of the population is currently 54.1% of the population with hospital tables coverage, and that data is the September quarter 2019 data, so it's relatively recent. Interestingly, whilst there's an acknowledged decline in coverage across Australia in terms of percent of the population, and that rate of decline has been around 0.6% per annum for some time. In Western Australia, that rate of decline has recently tailed off, and the September quarter and the June quarter haven't changed. So we're sitting at exactly 54.1% in both quarters, which is a very encouraging turnaround from the point of view of opportunities for patients to receive care in the private hospital sector. The Commonwealth has launched a range of initiatives to try and boost private health insurance coverage, things like clearly defining the classification of case mix and clinical categories within each of the product tiers, and they've defined the product tiers now as gold, silver, bronze and basic, with alignment to different case mix and activity and opportunity, therefore, to receive care in different kinds of private facilities. It's probably true to say the number of facilities hasn't changed markedly in recent years. As you can see here from the data, I just quoted the Commonwealth's figures in 2016-17 and the Department of Health's 2019 figures are largely the same. What has changed is the policy direction to, with the advent of the Health Services Act in 2016 and I guess an opportunity for HSPs at a public level to obtain case mix from the private sector. There's been a increase in the scale of the overall activity purchased from private sector operated hospitals in Western Australia in terms of public patient service delivery. So the Midland Hospital, for example, commissioned in 2015 is the latest example of that, a 367-bed facility delivering public and private services under contract with the East Metropolitan Region. But prior to that, the Peel Health Campus and the Joondalup Health Campus have been running for many years as PPP, contracted out private providers, and delivering a significant amount of public activity as private providers for the benefit of all Western Australians. So certainly from a policy point of view, that that emphasis which occurred, I guess, initially in about 1993 with the advent of the Peel Health Campus, and I apologise if the years are slightly out, but the contracting out of Joondalup and Peel in around the early 90s was, a forerunner for a significant expansion of public contracted out arrangements across Australia, and those arrangements now occur in Victoria and New South Wales and elsewhere. And quite successfully, certainly Callan's Hospital, Joondalup, is a wonderful example of what could be achieved through sensible contracting arrangements and the ability to respond to significant growth in a corridor where the private sector was able to offer a complete delineation of services in a private model against the clinical services framework, a full-blown emergency department, and I think now probably one of the busiest emergency departments in Australia. Critical care. So, from an acuity point of view and a case mix weighted point of view, the kind of case mix that Callan's Hospital is delivering is, comparable to any of the large secondary general hospitals on the public side that are publicly operated. So I guess from that point of view, that's how the sector's evolved in recent years. It's a very robust sector in Western Australia, given the largely stable PHI representation at 54.1%, meaning that, you know, significantly one in two people could potentially obtain their care in a private hospital should they choose to do so. We sit at about a full 8 or 9% higher than the rest of the nation. So the national coverage, I think, is around 44%, perhaps a little bit higher than that across the nation. So we are a state with a significantly higher coverage for PHI, which obviously provides opportunity to deliver more care in the private sector.
I've heard from you that, you know, the private hospital sector is providing, you know, over 40% of activity in the inpatient space. And also that there's been significant increase in contracted activity from the health service providers in the last few years. Either historically or recently, has there been any consideration that you know of around sustainability or environmental impact written into those contracts?
It's true to say that on the building side, certainly the construction side and commissioning side of the PPPs in terms of physical facility would give consideration to those matters and direct the construction outcomes to be environmentally sustainable and significant green rating. And the Australian Health Facility Guidelines, which is a collaboration between sectors, which have been adopted by reference into regulation here in Australia, in Western Australia, in our own versions, the Western Australian Health Facility Guidelines certainly also contain full consideration of smart building design and green principles in to some degree, but I guess there may be opportunities to look further into how that policy head of power might be able to direct better outcomes in that regard.
Very helpful, thank you. So if we could go to the kind of supply side, and we've heard a lot about the importance of procurement in this inquiry. The broad question, but do you know if the supply chains for pharmaceuticals, equipment, etc., are similar in both private and public sectors? And does the private hospital model change when there are contracts or partnerships with the public sector? So the private alone versus private-public,
yes.
How does that kind of shift in?
From the point of view of supply chains, it's probably true to say medical equipment, clinical consumables, pharmaceuticals are largely the same. There's obviously a greater degree of centralised coordination of procurement in state-run hospitals through the health support services in Western Australia is a good example, where contracts can be established for provision of inputs across the sector. That doesn't occur in Western Australia across the private sector, other than, say, for example, within groups, as Ramsay might, for example, have centralised purchasing and particular procurement arrangements with particular firms and then direct that across its constituent hospitals. But the multiplicity of hospitals and operators and arrangements mean that the opportunity for as tight a procurement control as in the public sector simply doesn't exist. It's probably also true to say that product choice is much broader in a private hospital delivering the same case mix because the private sector can essentially respond to the needs or wishes or requirements of the treating clinician. The treating clinician, let's say an orthopaedic surgeon who might have a particular product choice and consumables choice, prosthetic choice, equipment choice may, you know, be able to be accommodated, whatever that choice in the private sector. So there's simply not as much of a directed or constrained product range as would occur in the same public sector hospital.
And this could be a question either for you, Dr. Bauer or Mr. McLeod, does do those considerations shift when you move into a public-private partnership model?
No. Largely, procurement and consumables are left to the operator's arrangements, and they would say, for example, within a large group fall generally under the same procurement arrangements as the rest of that group's procurement is delivered by.
So thank you for the submission, the written submission from the Australian Private Hospitals Association, WA, and also for meeting with the inquiry team a few months back. And you told us then that you represent approximately 21 members, meaning I think the private hospitals, the main ones in Western Australia.
Yes.
In your submission, you gave some examples of waste recycling, energy conservation and water conservation in the sector. Perhaps I could ask Mr. McLeod, can you paint a picture for us of your particular facility at Joondalup and initiatives underway?
Okay. So I have a set list. I can just talk through the initiatives in order. So from the waste recycling and reduction, one of the key things I think that we've put in place in the last couple of years is a position that purely focuses on waste. So we have an Enviro Services leading hand waste coordinator, and their job is to coordinate the waste diversion across the hospital, and they've been quite key in driving new initiatives, finding new initiatives, and managing those waste streams, because the more waste streams that you take on, the amount of work increases. You know, where we used to maybe put it in two bins or three bins, we're now, you know, spreading it amongst maybe six, seven or eight different waste streams. But they've been very good at managing the change, managing the expectations of the wards and the managers and the departments, getting them on board and getting them involved in the different initiatives that we have. So that, for us, has been quite key and has made our initiatives not only just an initial success, but have made them sustainable, that they're still going. They haven't sort of started off with a big bang and then fallen by the wayside. We continue to drive those initiatives. We also have a Waste and Environment Committee, which meets every 2 months. I don't think that's unusual across any of the hospitals. But we have a broad range of people who attend, from myself, engineering, hotel services, clinical areas, theatres, allied health, and our contractor, our main contractor, also comes along to those meetings. They provide updates on how we're doing, how good our waste diversion is, and we also have yearly audits which are then reported on there, which give us an indication of the bins that our staff are putting the waste in are the correct bins. So if there's any discrepancies, they highlight those as well. And from those yearly audits, we'll then maybe have an action plan and know what we need to work on to improve for the future, and also what we're doing well. So some examples that I have is that over the 13 months from September 18 to September 19, we've had a overall reduction in general waste. We've increased our waste diversion to 28% as of September 19. By bed day, our general waste is trending down, and by bed day, our recycling is trending up. So shows that we're making good, consistent steps. The other thing that I could talk about is what Ramsay are doing nationally.
Can I ask you a couple of follow-up questions
first? Oh, sure, absolutely.
So, really interested to hear about the increased number of waste streams and the buy-in you've got, because we've heard that it's actually very difficult to get consistent waste separation inside, you know, hospitals by clinical staff. So what's the trick here? How have you managed to achieve this and sustain it?
The staff member that we have is very tenacious and very direct and doesn't give up. So, you know, it's not a goes in once and, you know, finds it a bit challenging and then just doesn't engage anymore. she keeps going back again and again and again. So she has been very key. We had another staff member previously who had to, was doing the similar role, but hadn't been able to get the traction. So it's finding, for us, it was finding that person, and they've been absolutely fantastic. I would say that's been our main key driver, is finding that person, being able to commit to have them as that is their key role.
Has there been a change in staff attitude as a result of having done this now for some time?
Yes, a lot of the departments, it feels that there is a passion for people. People want to do the right thing. People want to recycle. It's just giving them the opportunity and making it as easy as possible. It's like people walking across a park, you see where the duck track is, that's the shortest route and that's the easiest path of least resistance. So what we try and do is, the lady has done a lot of work with the wards and with theatres to find out what will be the easiest way. So they'll try something, if it doesn't work, she'll go back, think about it, try again, until we find that path of least resistance that makes it easy for them to make those good choices.
And so just my second question is around training. So what kind of training do clinical staff need? And it might just be what that person going and showing them what to do.
Yeah.
But also, is there a need for training of facility managers? Because they're certainly key, have whatever they've officially designated, that kind of role inside a hospital, whether public or private, the facility manager role is key to this whole environment and waste issue. And it seems to me that there's little dedicated training for those staff in this whole area of environment and climate change. Or I'm getting it wrong here.
Okay. So I hope I answer your question. So as a support services manager, I oversee the enviro housekeeping back of house sort of services. One of the things that we did was we had a waste open day where we showed all the different recycling streams that we have. We have leaflets that are given out at orientation for new staff members, which show all the different waste streams that we have. So again, it's a very simple, small flyer. And that was done in conjunction with the contractor that we have. Any posters that we put up above or around the waste bins that we want to that we want them to use. We have a lot of consultation with our clinical experts to make sure that the posters are saying the right thing or not confusing or providing the right message. With theatres, so theatres have a staff member who, it's not their sole job, it's one of their jobs, they're the waste champion for that area. So theatres are a significant area.
We're just thinking about making some kind of recommendation around the networking and perhaps training, upskilling of facility managers so they could get together and across maybe public and private hospitals and share stuff and get up to date with initiatives.
Yeah, that would be very good. I mean, we're quite lucky within our Ramsey group that we share information with Hollywood Private Hospital, and those initiatives that they've started that we've gone, that's fantastic, we'll have some of that, and we've taken on those initiatives. To expand that to the public sector as well and have that transparency and sharing ideas would be fantastic.
Thank you. Would you like to talk about the Ramsey initiatives nationally?
Yeah, what I can do is, but I think really what I'm going to talk to is, this is our Ramsey Way, which is the national magazine. I don't know if you just want to, I can give that to you, sorry. So specifically that page.
I might just read this into the record, Yep, so this is the Ramsay Way 2019. Is it edition 3?
Edition 3, yeah.
And it's page 8.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And so I was part of one of 35 staff who went to Sydney and took part in the corporate social responsibility strategy that Ramsay want to undertake. So basically, they were asking people from hospitals all over Australia, all different backgrounds, you know, clinical support services, catering, what they felt would be what we need, what Ramsay needed to do. So Ramsay did this not only in Australia, but they did it in, they were doing it in France and in the UK and there are other locations around the world. So they're coming up with a global strategy. And the other article that's there is Ramsay's Hospitals Wage $1 million War on Waste, where Ramsay Healthcare have created a $1 million environmental sustainability fund to support hospitals to undertake projects that reduce carbon emissions. And any one hospital can get funding up to $100,000.
That's terrific information for us to have. And particularly that incentive fund idea, is that a new initiative?
So that's come out as of September 2019, yeah.
And I think is a signal of the sector, Ramsay, the sector taking this whole issue quite seriously now. That's
absolutely, I would agree. There's been a lot more focus on that from not just locally, because we feel we're doing a lot at our hospital, local hospital level, but it's recognising that, you know, Ramsay completely support what we're doing.
Thanks, Mr. McLeod. Dr. Power, are you aware of the Global Green and Healthy Hospitals Initiative, which has been promoted by the Minister in discussion with the public health service providers? Could this initiative be relevant to the private hospital sector in Western Australia?
Yes, certainly, Karen. It's a wonderful framework that builds, an approach around categories like leadership, chemicals, waste, energy, food, pharmaceuticals, buildings, transport, and so forth. So from a hospital point of view, it aligns, you know, very nicely with, the common model of hospitals worldwide. Speaking to one operator, the Epworth Group in Victoria, who've been a member for some time, they consider that the feedback from their chief of the facilities, Andrew Bond, and the chief executive officer, Dr. Lachlan Henderson, is that they consider the framework to be a really useful opportunity to learn within those categories from others and participate in the online forums and the examples and benchmarking and so forth that are available through that initiative. So whilst membership by Australian Hospital is not wide, it's certainly something that could be promoted more across the private sector and others.
Thank you. We've heard from some of the health service providers already, and the same question we've asked them as we're asking you, which is clearly, you know, the sector is making initiatives in this sustainability area, but are you getting any specific feedback from staff or patients about their expectations of private hospital facilities with respect to waste and minimising your environmental footprint?
Probably something we can both speak to,
Callum. Yeah, I would agree that people's expectations are that anything that's being used in the hospital, that it's automatic that it would be disposed of responsibly, and where we can, reduce it or reuse it or recycle it. Absolutely, I think that's not an unrealistic expectation that people have now when they come in to the hospital.
And from my point of view, taking a brief look through some of the patient feedback we've had over the past couple of years. Patients that are longer length of stay, admissions, certainly have longer time to contemplate what's going on around them and make useful observations of things like energy initiatives that we might take, or water conservation, planting choices in gardens, packaging choices on their meal trays, this sort of thing. So certainly the feedback from patients is constant and useful. Staff feedback, certainly, and particularly in the younger generations with an activism in this space, are really keen to be involved in the initiatives at the hospital level and make time to do so. So it comes from both patients and staff.
Doctor, just at this point, is there any observation you'd like to make as CEO of Perth Clinic, which is a private psychiatric clinic, about that sector? So we haven't really talked about that in the inquiry so far, you know, because there would be longer stay patients, I imagine.
Yes. I'd like to just, I guess, talk in the general sense about the importance of length of stay as a contributor to utilisation of these resources, of all resources, energy, water, and consumables. In Australia, it's true that the private health sector in general operates at a greater length of stay efficiency than the public sector for the same, largely the same case mix. So certainly the acuity of admissions in the public sector is generally higher, but the case mix or the diagnostic categories are very similar across public and private hospitals. You know, whether it's a voluntary psychiatric admission in a facility like mine that may stay for 18 days, 20 days, or medical surgical hospital admission in a private sector hospital, the diagnostic group's largely the same. So from the point of view of a contribution to climate change, the fact that the private sector's focus is on length of stay, the private sector's, just going back a step to the remuneration model from the health funds, private sector hospitals are paid on an episodic basis generally, or a per diem basis for the longer lengths of stay, for example, psychiatric or rehabilitation admissions. But generally, the medical surgical admissions paid on an episodic basis, a single case payment within which the private sector hospital can manage the length of stay. And obviously, the sooner you can complete the admission and get a good outcome and discharge the patient, the greater the opportunity for making a margin on that single case payment, which means that the emphasis on efficiency in the length of stay contributes to greater environmental benefit, whereas most private hospitals are not full. Therefore, a shorter length of stay simply means you can turn the light out in the room and stop servicing the waste disposal there, and there's a little limited water use then, or less water use, so that just all of the inputs are generally less because of the shorter length of stay. Therefore, it wouldn't be unreasonable to say that constant focus on length of stay management in private hospitals is of enormous environmental benefit, given the same case mix largely that is seen across both public and private sectors. And particularly in the longer lengths of stay segments of the sector like my own, the private psychiatric facilities where patients, as I said, across Australia on average, according to the Australian Private Hospitals Association, stay around 20 days, and the same figure in a public hospital is some 4 or 5 days longer, I understand. So the opportunity for saving again is quite significant in terms of a benefit to the environment. So that average length of stay across the public sector, and I've got the AIHW's last enumeration. Bear with me, I'll find it for you. 2.2 days on average for both ambulatory and multi-day admitted case mix in the private sector, and 3 days for all ambulatory and admitted ambulatory and multi-day case mix in the public sector. So a 26.6% difference, largely the same case mix across both sectors, which would obviously have an important benefit to the consumption of resources and the environmental outcomes in that regard. So I guess the case payment model in the private sector can drive efficiencies and thereby an opportunity to conserve resources in delivering that care.
That's a very interesting point which hasn't been made to us before, so we'll take that on board. Thank you. I suppose it goes into that reduce, reuse, recycle. It's on that reduce end. If you can, you know, the best thing you can do is reduce the, I'm speaking out loud here, reduce the amount of care in these high environmentally impacting settings.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Is this an issue that's been discussed at a board or level in your sector, and what would it take to elevate this issue to that strategic or board level? And I'm just asking broadly, is it about risk management, is it about financial impact, or is it about corporate values? And I do note that, you know, the sustainability news newsletter you've just given us from Ramsey does talk about corporate social responsibility.
I'm sorry, you have to ask me that question again.
The framing is around corporate social responsibility in terms of why you might be doing your international work. But there are also other potential drivers for having this discussed at a board or strategic level, which might include, you know, it's actually, you might save some money by being environmentally sound, or it might be about risk management, in that there might be actual risks around capital or supply chains or whatever it is, which is driving the consideration at board level.
I could make some sector-wide comments. I mean, there's no doubt that that triple bottom line is widespread in, the public-facing information sources by most private hospital operators in Australia these days, that financial, social and environmental imperative. And, you know, the extent to which consumers might seek to product differentiate is an interesting topic. These days, consumers are so much more aware of their opportunity to determine where they go for their care. You know, they'll have a diagnosis made, obviously, by specialists, and then there's plenty of opportunity to determine where they go, you know, which operator and under which flag they're admitted. Most specialists will have credentials across numerous providers. In many cases. So the consumer can drive the determination of which site they might be admitted on through, and obviously in perusing public-facing information websites and environmental credentials and other matters, I'm sure, particularly in younger generations, an increasing interest in, you know, wanting to go somewhere that flags their environmental commitment, their lesser footprint environmentally and so forth. I don't have any information on that in terms of quantification, but I could well imagine it's a feature of people's decision making in terms of the choice of destination for admission.
So that triple bottom line reporting, as you say, it's our impression that that's actually probably more prevalent in the private sector than it is in the public sector, and has been there for decades. And I think most of the, you know, top 100 companies, not talking healthier, but just generally, would have some kind of sustainability reporting or even separate sustainability plan and report separate to the annual report. You don't see that so much, I don't think, in the public sector. Have you got any impression about whether the private health or private hospital sector has similar kind of separate reports or parts of the annual reports that deal with sustainability?
I don't have any examples that I can give you, but certainly they exist. It's just such a commonplace consideration these days, in particularly the publicly listed companies. I would be surprised if Ramsey doesn't showcase their initiatives in their annual documents and public-facing information.
Yeah, I would agree. So I don't have any specific details, but from my recollection, I'm sure that they do, even in the Joondalup Health Campus's annual report, they have a section about what they're doing from a corporate social responsibility view. I can't give you details.
Fine. Thank you. Okay, so just coming to the last few minutes of the hearing. There seems to be, and we've talked about it a little bit, a plausible connection between hospital waste, hospital costs, and then, by inference, insurance premiums, if you can get hospital costs down. Are you aware of any discussions between health insurers and private hospitals about issues we've talked about this morning?
I guess the remuneration model, as I said, an episodic payment does provide opportunities for initiatives to be driven to save inputs and thereby improve margin. But given labour is by far and away the largest component cost of delivering care in public and private hospitals, the opportunity to drive premiums down by a focus on waste or non, if you like, labour-driven inputs, I wouldn't think is great, but it would be, it would certainly be real. Sector's not in discussion, and to my knowledge, having been in the private sector now for 13 years in largely the same sort of role with several operators, Healthscope, Ramsay and others, Perth Clinic now is a privately operated and owned facility. Certainly we're not being driven by the funds to focus on waste or energy or environmental outcomes as part of a push to reduce premiums.
We've had some informal discussions around the potential, for example, should there be a greater incidence of extreme weather events driving up a range of premiums, whether that could have a future flow-on effect into people's capacity and willingness to pay for private health insurance as another insurance cost. So potentially if you're paying more for other insurance costs, you might say, well, I don't have quite the capacity to pay for private health insurance. Has that been raised with you at any point?
There's no doubt that price sensitivity is an issue in the privately insured marketplace presently, and the federal government's reforms are focused on endeavouring to achieve a cap on the growth in premium indexation going forward. I think the federal minister's on the record currently as, you know, wanting outcomes less than a 3% indexation outcome across the health insurance group federally in the next round, and that premium growth has a focus on constraining that premium growth certainly exists in order to remove the, I guess, the pressure on price sensitivity within that market, and the evidence of the effectiveness of that approach is certainly being seen. So, for example, the data in WA I showed you or mentioned earlier. The link between all other expenses to a person and private health insurance and other insurances, I'm not so certain about. But, yeah, certainly price sensitivity is an issue within the private health industry.
Okay, last question, which is kind of looking forward. So the inquiry has to make some recommendations about, you know, the next few years, and we're certainly getting a sense that people want to partner with government and everyone feels that they have a role. And perhaps you could reflect a little bit of the Australian Private Hospitals Association in WA and whether you feel, you know, you'd like to be part of the partnerships going forward to see what more could be done, particularly given your share of, you know, of the activity in the hospital sector, and also whether there's an opportunity to kind of share initiatives and successes, not just amongst your members, but broadly between private and public.
If I could speak for the sector, or certainly the members of which I'm aware, they'd be very keen to participate in a state coordinated forum that shared information across both public and private sectors. It's good business to, you know, be well aware of ways to reduce your inputs and provide a better marketable outcome from the point of view of environmental sustainability in your public-facing persona as a corporation. So, you know, these all make good business sense, and I'm sure everybody would be keen to participate in those kinds of initiatives.
I would agree. Some of the ideas that we've had have come from, you know, hearing about what another hospital is doing and then investigating that and going, you know, we're now going to take that on, you know, so the more communication. And I know that within Ramsay, nationally, the group of 35 that we had for the corporate social responsibility meeting, you know, they're there's a lot of chatter amongst those. And yeah, to have the same within the state would be fantastic from in my view.
Right. Dr. Joyce attended a Greening the Healthcare Sector Forum in Victoria a month or two back, which was, I think, a good opportunity to share information. And personally, I'd love to see that kind of forum here in Western Australia at some point next year as potentially as a follow-up to this inquiry. So it would be great to have both the private and public health sectors represented.
Terrific.
Dr. Power, Mr. McLeod, thank you both for your attendance at today's hearing. A transcript of this hearing will be sent to you so that you can correct minor factual errors before it is placed on the public record. If you could please return the transcript within 10 working days of the date of the covering letter or email, otherwise it will be deemed to be correct. While you cannot amend your evidence, if you would like to explain particular points in more detail or present further information, you can provide this as an addition to your submission to the inquiry when you return the transcript. I'll take this, if we could keep this addition off the Ramsey Way, we'll put this as part of the record
Absolutely.
Of this hearing. Once again, thank you both very much for your evidence.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.